This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
It is 7:47. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning. This morning's Israel Report brought to you by Morris Hirsch, Lieutenant Colonel Morris Hirsch from the Jerusalem Center for Security and Foreign Affairs. A very, very good morning to you. Thank you for joining us. Let's start with some good news. Kazakhstan will be the first country to join the Abraham Accord. Was this a surprise?
So I think it's very interesting, Howard. Firstly, good morning to you and to the listeners. It's interesting because Israel and Kazakhstan have had relations for many, many years. And their inclusion in the Abraham Accords is, I think, somewhat more of an expression of this is the changing face of the Middle East, and this is part of the impetus to move forward. This is a drive in the Abraham Accords on a little bit more. And I think really that's the main goal here. But it is something which is definitely, I think, positive for more and more countries to join the Abraham Accords. Good for them, good for us.
What does it mean practically?
Well, so what the Abraham Accords have done, at least with the other countries who have joined, it's meant that it's been an opening of trade routes. It means that there's been an opening of almost of borders towards visits, tourism, for there and back. I think there are almost more Israelis than there are in the country have visited Dubai the Abraham Accords in 2020. And so really that's been the outcome, really a tremendous push for the economies of all the countries and sort of better relations. I mean, that's always been a tricky subject when you have good relations. I mean, we've had a peace agreement, as it were, with Egypt since 1979, and yet Egypt is one of our most vocal critics and votes against us in the UN constantly and promotes all types of anti-Israel activity. So what does it actually mean on the diplomatic front is, I think, very different from the economic front.
Is there any indication of who will be next?
Well, I think there's been a lot of discussion about Syria on the way, possibly of Saudi Arabia. That's, I think, one of the major goals. I think it's hard to say exactly who will be part of that cycle. There are countries that could easily join because they have nothing really. They have no fight with Israel. I mean, that was the greatness of the idea of the Abraham Accords, taking countries that have no argument with Israel. They have no conflict with Israel. They're just Arab countries and saying, well why are you so hostile to Israel? Why are you denying yourselves the progress that you could receive from good relations with Israel? And can we move on from that idea of the latest Palestinian rejectionist holding your country hostage, as it were, and preventing your own development?
Who's the biggest prize? Would it be Saudi?
So I think really Saudi Arabia would be quite a tremendous addition to the Abraham Accords. Again, with Saudi Arabia, we have no war. We probably have more in common than anything else. The Saudis know very well that the Shiite push, that the Iranian push is to take back Mecca or to take Mecca from them. As part of the Sunnah Shia ongoing, 1500-year war, and so that's Saudi Arabia understands that we have a common enemy, and that's Iran. The question is whether they're able to really cut themselves off from the history of rejectionism and say, you know what, it's time to move on. We've accepted Israel's right to exist, their presence in the area. And I think that that's something which one would hope that Saudi Arabia would be able to do.
Let's talk about what is happening in terms of southern Lebanon. The IDF has carried out waves of strikes. Is this ceasefire effectively over, or is there still belief that it continues?
Well, so here's a prime example, Howard, Lebanon. Lebanon should be joining the Abraham Accords. It's sort of a no-brainer. We have no beef with Lebanon. We have no, really, they are not a threat to us, really, and we are certainly not a threat to them. We have so much more to gain from good relations. And yet, unfortunately, the Lebanese government, which is really talking the talk but not walking the walk, is saying that it's going to disarm Hezbollah, but isn't really doing anything about it. And yesterday we saw the response of Hezbollah saying openly, clearly, we are not going to disarm as the ceasefire agreement requires. We are not going to release our stranglehold on Lebanon, and we are determined to plunge Lebanon back into another war with Israel. And then you see the Israeli strikes. So unfortunately, instead of choosing the path of life, prosperity, really and really good relations, the Lebanese government, at the behest of Hezbollah, being forced by Hezbollah, you can choose your superlative there, is really choosing the path of animosity and violence. And that's going to be disastrous for Lebanon. Lebanon's already a failed country. And now they're just going to get into another round of violence, which will serve no one, only the mullahs and the mullahs in Iran.
The just over a year ago, Israel effectively, is it a year ago? Yeah, just over a year ago, Israel dealt what was pretty much a death blow, or almost a death blow, to Hezbollah, taking out many of its soldiers, many of its, most of its leadership. What does Hezbollah even look like today?
So Hezbollah, unfortunately, in the last year has spent a lot of time rehabilitating itself, recruiting new people into the organization, promoting and training the lower levels to assume the higher position. So that's on the organizational side. On the unfortunately, they've also been receiving weapons from Iran and replenishing their missile stockpiles, so that they can again be fighting and sending missiles at Israel. So, I mean, that's what they've been doing over the last year. Instead of disarming, I think the Lebanese government had a golden opportunity a year ago when Hezbollah, as you rightly described it, was literally on its knees. The Syrian, the Assad regime had been toppled. They were no longer getting support from Iran via Syria. The senior leadership of Hezbollah had been eliminated. The mid-level leadership had been eliminated. And this was a tremendous opportunity. But unfortunately, the Lebanese government chose a different path. And so Hezbollah really has rehabilitated itself to obviously not to the extent where it was before the start of the war, but certainly very much so since its low a year ago.
Which is really incredibly sad, because it really, there was a tremendous opportunity there. And you know, so if you look at it, and which leads me on to my next question or subject, is if you look at the fact that this is escalating slowly, but it is in southern Lebanon, Hezbollah rearming their parts of Gaza, a significant part of Gaza that is still very, very much Hamas controlled, and there's little little signs that Hamas will be willing to disarm, which was part of the agreement. What does this mean for the war? Where are we along the, you know, if October 7th is the beginning and date X is the end, how close are we to that? Have we passed the end, or is that still to come?
So I think really this is the challenge that is now, really the challenge that is facing the US administration and the Israeli government. It's a question of resolve. Whether either of those central players, the US administration or the Israeli government, have the sufficient resolve to carry out and carry through on what was agreed, which means the destruction of and disarmament of Hamas and the destruction and disarmament of Hezbollah. All of the terrorists in the area are looking at what's going on. See who, it's almost a question of who's going to blink first. If we allow these terrorists, these genocidal terrorists, to continue to survive, for them victory is to live another day rather than anything else. And if we allow them to do that, I think that that's going to have tremendously negative consequences for the entire region. And it's something which needs to be really fulfilled very to the fullest of extent to prevent these terrorist organizations again threatening the entire area.
Because the reality is that this phase for Hamas is preferable to the next phase, which means that the likelihood of the six remaining bodies of the murdered hostages coming back diminishes each week or each day, whatever that would be. And there's going to be a point where something great is triggered. Would you agree with that assessment?
What Hamas has felt all the way through is that as long as there is not a substantial military pressure on them, they don't have to do anything. The first round of releases, if you remember, back in November 2023, was a result of the massive force that was used at the start of the war. The next round in January 2025 was the result of, again, massive force that had been used and Hamas feeling that it was under pressure. This time as well, let's not fool ourselves. What pushed Hamas into agreeing to the ceasefire deal was the substantial pressure that was being applied to Gaza City, one of its last strongholds, and suddenly they realized if we don't choose a different path, then we're going to lose everything. And so at the moment, I think you're absolutely right. While Hamas feels no immediate military pressure to move forward, to disarm, to meet its commitments, then they never will. They will continue rebuilding themselves, rehabilitating themselves, continue stealing all of the aid that's going into the Gaza Strip. And really we'll find ourselves, instead of finishing the conflict, we'll find ourselves preparing for the next war. And that, I think, will be a terrible shame.
Absolutely. That is where we leave it. Lieutenant Colonel Maurice Hirsch from the Jerusalem Center for Security and Foreign Affairs, wishing you a Shabbat Shalom. It is 8 o'clock.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.